Set your course for the Huff
Takes Podcast.
Welcome to Hoth Takes. I'm Eric Geller.
I'm Grace Seegers.
And unfortunately, Haley could not be with us today, but we have a great topic. We're going to be talking about the cancellation of The Acolyte, what it says about Disney's decision-making, and what it says about Star Wars fandom. And we have a special guest for this episode, Bill Cookman, assistant managing editor at Politico, and my former Star Wars work buddy over there. Bill, welcome to Hoth Takes.
Hello. Thanks for having me, guys.
Now, before we dive in, I do just want to clarify that, to the best of my knowledge, Disney has not officially confirmed that it is not renewing The Acolyte. This news broke in Deadline, the Hollywood publication, on August 19th, about a week after we recorded our last episode. But Deadline is generally reliable, and obviously Disney has not disputed the report. So this news is, to my mind, about as official as it's going to get. So The Acolyte is not going to be getting a second season. All right, now, Bill, I want to have you on. I wanted to have you on because you have a pop culture newsletter, Pop Culturology, and after this news broke, you wrote a post titled, "Those Cowards Canceled The Acolyte." So not mincing words there. And in that spirit, I want to start with you. Give me kind of a 30-second high-level take on what happened here.
So to even go back one step further, those cowards canceled The Acolyte was a follow-up to a previous post after the season ended that I titled "Give the Acolyte a Second Season, You Cowards." Basically just saying, no, like I have a theme going here. Basically, I think a lot of fans saw the way the winds were blowing and had that sinking, I have a bad feeling about this, that Disney was going to cancel the show. I know a lot of people loved it. I know you guys were mixed on it. But I think a lot of people really, really liked the show and it meant something to them. But unfortunately, at the same time, there was a very vocal group online that from the beginning, before they saw a minute of footage, hated the show. Your trolls, your anti-fans, your YouTubers who were angry that Ki Adi Mundi has a different birthday now than some CD-ROM in 1999 told them was his birthday. And to me, no matter what the internals were at Disney, were the ratings not great? Was it too expensive? No matter what real reason they had for canceling The Acolyte, the message would be sent that those trolls won. And I think we've seen that. Amanda Stenberg has posted about this. A certain pretty notorious Star Wars YouTuber has picked it up as a personal affront to himself. I think that boiled down to me, if you're going to cancel the show, the message is these trolls won. And that's unfortunate because that's been the message from Disney basically since The Last Jedi. That you have a movie or a show with diversity, whether it's, Kelly Marie Tran, Amanda Stenberg, Manny Jacinto, Tem Morrison, even with, The Book of Boba Fett. If there's backlash, those shows and movies either, they don't keep going or they get, massively retconned with, The Rise of Skywalker. And, whether or not that's the reason Disney's doing this, that's the message that's sent, and that's unfortunate for, the fan base in general.
Grace, what is your kind of initial thought here as we think about all the reasons why this could have happened and we factor in, as Bill said, that context of the racist fan backlash? What do you make of the decision, both why you think it happened and, as Bill said, the message that it sends to the community?
I think Bill is completely right that they are cowards. And I know that sounds a bit harsh, but it's Disney, so that's not exactly like I'm punching down here. I completely agree that whenever Disney Star Wars tries to make any overture to doing something slightly different, whether it is narratively or especially whether it's because there's some diversity in a show or movie, the backlash is horrible. For Kelly Marie Tran and John Boyega, I'm thinking of in the sequels, and how John Boyega especially saw his character sidelined from the first movie into the second and third sequel movies, barely seeing his character at all. And regardless of what the stated reason is, it's always going to come across as the vocal minority of whiny babies who are upset about seeing people of color and women on their TV screens. It's going to come across that they won. And I'm not saying that Star Wars wasn't reactive pre-Disney. Sorry, that was a lot of double negatives there. But we know that there was a lot of massive blowback to the prequels as well. But this was before my time, so if there was any like racist or sexist blowback to the prequels, I don't really know about it. But there's long been that vocal coterie of fans saying, Star Wars is completely ruined because of this new thing. Like, absolute tale as old as time. So to give in and say, you know, we're not going to continue with this new thing, we're not going to continue on this experimental path, for whatever reason that may be, and I'm very skeptical of whatever reason that may be, it just always seems like you are going to be placating the trolls, especially when you have stars like Amanda Stenberg, who just received this vicious vitriol and had to keep going in the face of that. It's just, it's really disappointing and it sucks. And, you know, I wasn't the biggest fan of The Acolyte. I thought it had a lot of flaws, but I was really excited to see where it went next. And it had me excited about Star Wars in a way that I don't often feel with new shows anymore. So, you know, you can say that, oh, they canceled it because maybe it wasn't getting good viewership, and who knows, maybe that's true, but it seems kind of BS, especially when you're spending a bajillion dollars on season whatever of The Mandalorian.
Well, to me, this gets to a really fundamental tension in, you know, the Star Wars universe, any fictional universe, which is, it's a business, ultimately. You're trying to tell stories that are exciting and also profitable, but you can't ignore that cultural context of your stars are getting attacked on social media in racist and sexist ways, and your business decisions have the potential to validate or negate the way that some of those bigots online are talking about your product. You know, if you cancel a show with diverse leads, and that's a show that's gotten attention for its diverse leads, the people who don't like that diversity are going to see that as vindication. They're going to see that as a sign that, you know, they spoke and Disney listened. And so I guess, you know, I want to get into some of the kind of background on the show a little bit here that might offer an explanation for why Disney did what they did. But before we get to that, I'd love to hear from both of you, you know, how should a company in Disney's position balance the need to make these business conscious decisions? Because if it pours too much money into something that's not working, it's going to not have enough money for other things, with the need to defend its stars and the need to be a welcoming place for future storytellers. I can't imagine that a lot of people of color or a lot of LGBTQ people are looking at Star Wars and thinking, this is a place where I want to work as a creative because they have my back. I don't know that Disney has necessarily shown that they have these performers and writers' backs necessarily when the racists and the sexists come for them.
So, Eric, it's interesting. You mentioned that, like, I was just thinking back to the fact that, like, you know, Grace was talking about the backlash to the prequels. And to me, the difference there was, you know, when it was George Lucas, that was his company. And he was the only voice that mattered. And he could say, I don't care what you say about the prequels. I'm going to keep doing them. And not only am I going to keep doing them, I'm going to double down on them with an entire series, Clone Wars, that, you know, fleshes them out and justifies them. And, you know, turns the prequels into these three movies that fans are like, I don't know if this works, into, you know, just this amazing long-running storyline that fans not only loved, but have demanded to see more of. We've seen the Clone Wars come back as Rebels, as, you know, Tales of the Jedi, Tales of the Empire, the Ahsoka show. But to me, you know, when it was George Lucas, he was only had to worry about himself. He didn't care about losing money on them. It was his money. You know, the man made, what was it, $4 point something billion when he sold Lucasfilm to Disney. Whereas Disney, obviously, you know, they're a business, like you said. They have to, you know, they have shareholders to worry about. They had a CEO shift in the middle of this whole process, going from, you know, Bob Iger to Bob Chapek, back to Bob Iger. And the return of Bob Iger to Disney, I think, is a major factor in what we're seeing here. You know, under Chapek, they launched Disney Plus. They had this idea of, like, we're going to put all this stuff on a streaming. You know, they had that giant presentation with Kathleen Kennedy where they announced, you know, Rangers of the New Republic, a Lando series, these projects that, you know, for various reasons, obviously, Rangers of the New Republic was Gina Carano. But a lot of these things haven't, you know, panned out, and they're just gone. Because the shift has gone from, well, maybe we don't need to feed the streaming machine anymore, to, well, what if we get back to, you know, the traditional theatrical releases? We've even heard recently, like, Disney and Marvel are talking about, like, rumors that, you know, the Armor Wars TV show and even the Blade movie might be up in the air right now. And I think as Iger's shifted the focus to movies, the idea of, like, you know, we're not going to just dump a ton of, you know, we're not going to back up, you know, money bin after money bin to keep these series going. They want to do movies again. And I feel like that played a small part in what happened to The Acolyte. The idea that, you know, they have, I think there's four movies on the books right now. Mandalorian and Grogu, the Dawn of the Jedi movie, the Daisy Ridley, basically episode 10 movie, and Filoni's, Heir to the Empire movie. And I think we've seen it recently. Disney's really, they've enjoyed a really good summer in terms of the box office. You had Inside Out 2 became the highest grossing animated movie ever. We had Deadpool and Wolverine become the highest grossing rated R movie ever. And then we also, I just wrote this in my most recent edition of Pop Culturalogy. We saw Disney pull Moana from being a Disney Plus series to being an actual theatrical release sequel. So I think Disney is having this major shift where, you know, in the height of the pandemic, they were like, okay, we're going all in on streaming. We're going to do streaming. This is where it is. Star Wars, Pixar, Disney, Marvel. And they're going, well, maybe that's not the answer anymore. So I think that's a big part of it, what we're seeing right now, that, you know, the company is shifting. But once again, you know, that doesn't save Lucasfilm from the perception of what it means to cancel this show.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you brought up that kind of how Disney wants to spend money and the idea of kind of backing up the truck to keep a steady stream of streaming series going, because I think that the numbers here are important. As much as there are perception issues created by canceling a show that has attracted this backlash, as we said, Disney is a business, and it's going to make decisions based on what the numbers say. And frankly, the numbers for The Acolyte were not great. It was released over a 7-week period, because that first week it released two episodes, and it was only in the top 10 most viewed original streaming shows that in the Nielsen numbers three of those 7 weeks, and I believe that first week was one of them when they had both the first two episodes come out. So to only be in the top 10 in three of your 7 weeks, that's not great. Now, those are Nielsen numbers. They do the household surveys like they do for traditional TV. Disney does not release its own numbers, but generally people look at the Nielsen numbers as a decent proxy. Those are not good numbers. Furthermore, the budget for this show, according to the New York Times, was $180 million for 8 episodes. That's $22.5 million an episode, which is a higher per episode rate than Andor and The Mandalorian Season 1, and I believe Season 2 as well. So Disney was spending a lot of money on a show that did not do well. Now, we can talk about, there are cult classic shows that do not perform well in their original run, but they're beloved by fans who understand the story that they're trying to tell and the themes that they're trying to bring out, and they have a resurgence later. No dispute there. This could end up being a cult classic show, certainly possible, but businesses are not run that way. If they're not getting the numbers that they like, and if they think that they can spend that money elsewhere for better results, that's what they're going to do. So I bring that up just to say, I think a lot of the conversations are like Disney is bowing to the toxic fans. And I want to kind of separate that out from like Disney is doing something that the toxic fans will feel is validation. because I don't think that they made this decision based on the fan backlash. I think there are a lot of reasons why these numbers were as low as they were, and part of it might be the things that we have talked about on Hot Takes and others have talked about, which is that the story had a lot of problems. So I don't necessarily see this as actually caving to the fans per se.
Yeah, I think that there's two ways to look at this, and there's the business way and the fan way, and that sounds very obvious. But when you're thinking about it as a fan, you're thinking about it in the vacuum. You're not thinking about it within the larger context of all of the business decisions that Disney has to make and costs. So if you're a troll, you're not thinking about, well, maybe they canceled The Acolyte because of all of these financial decisions. You think, all right, they canceled The Acolyte because of my really mean tweets that I sent. So I think that knowledge won't do anything to deter the trolls. But also, I would say that when you have such negative backlash around a show before it even comes out, and when you have people who are absolutely determined not to like a show, that does damage. And even if they lose only a small percentage of potential viewers, that's still not great. And the other thing I will say is I think this is just emblematic of a larger issue with streaming shows as a whole. And it's true of Netflix. It's true of pretty much any streaming service that does original content now. It feels like there's so much pressure to watch a new original series, and you know it's going to be canceled. And unless it goes immediately viral and has the most views ever, then it's going to get canceled after the first season. And I can't even think of how many Netflix shows I have gotten invested in that have been canceled immediately. And it makes me want to not watch new original shows. And I think the same is kind of true of Disney and the Star Wars shows as well. But I think it's just part of the larger problem with streaming overall is that the incentives are so, so skewed. And, you know, back in the day, like the 2000s, you would have shows that would have 25 episodes and someone would tell you, yeah, the first 50 episodes aren't great, but wait till you get to the third season. That's when it gets really good. And you just kind of slog through the first two seasons and then you get to the third season when it's really good.
I mean, could you imagine like Parks and Rec? I feel that's a perfect example. It was like the first season and a half until Rob Lowe and the guy who played Ben.
Adam Scott
showed up. It was a different show. And like I've told friends, I'm like, you have to watch this, but also the first season and a half, you got to get through it.
Yeah, exactly. It's just how we used to watch shows. The other thing that I think of is Buffy. Like Buffy the Vampire Slayer has a really weak first season. And then the second season is amazing. But these days, Buffy would never make it to the second season. Parks and Rec probably wouldn't make it to the second season. And the way that TV is set up now with streaming services is just, it's not good for storytelling. And I think in a lot of ways, creators are being set up to fail. And I think that was very much the case for Leslie Headland. And there's just a lot of pressure to be immediately successful by whatever the bonkers metrics are, because the metrics also keep changing. But if you're not immediately successful, you're going to get canceled. Even if you are immediately successful and make it to the top 10 of most watched Netflix shows for 3 weeks, you're probably going to get canceled. Like the system is rigged against content creators, and I find that very frustrating as a viewer, so I'm sure it must be really frustrating as the people making this stuff.
And I'm sure it's particularly frustrating because Disney is a company that has money to spend. This is not a cash-strapped broadcast network that has to be really careful with its fall primetime lineup. That world is increasingly bygone. We're moving into an era of these ginormous fat cat streaming studios, your Amazon Primes and your Netflixes, which as they become the place to watch television, and as they don't face as much traditional competition from broadcasters, they're just competing with each other at this point. They're not, you know, sitting around penny pinching. Disney could have probably let this show continue to run for two more seasons, for all I know, and its television division would probably have been just fine, right? But the question is, what is the threshold for saying we've got to pull the plug? And I think, Grace, the point you're making is that threshold has been set impossibly low, such that unless you are a breakout hit, you are not clearing, you know, we always hear about shows on the bubble in that season renewal phase. If you are not a breakout hit, you don't clear the bubble. You don't pass, get past that threshold and get a renewal. And it's this dance every year of trying to get the numbers to be renewed again. Now, that's to some extent just how television works, right? But on the other hand, when you're Disney and you are not just like throwing shows at the wall, but ostensibly creating a shared universe for a property like Star Wars, the approach is not the same, because ideally you're telling stories that you want to connect to other stories. You can't just cut a show and assume that the rest of your plans are going to be intact. And in the Acolyte's case, it doesn't seem to be a problem because it wasn't connected to a lot of other things. But you could imagine this same problem happening to a show that is in the sort of Mandoverse era of Star Wars. But perhaps that's another conversation of, if a show did this poorly in viewership and was this expensive, but it was set in that interconnected era, would it have been canceled after one season? That's kind of an interesting thought experiment.
I don't think it would be. Like, honestly, I am bored of the Mandoverse at this point. I don't know if either of you, did you catch the leaked footage from D23 of the movie? Like, it was on Twitter. There was someone there. They were recording. They claim they didn't realize they shouldn't be recording and posting on Twitter. So a lot of the trailers pop up that way. And I was watching some scene of, you know, the Mandalorian and Grogu going down a snowy hill, and there was an AT-ST or an AT-AT. And I was like, I had this moment where I was like, I am so bored of this. And it was the first time I've ever seen something in Star Wars and thought to myself, do I not like Star Wars anymore? Like, is this not for me? Which is great. Like, it's fine. Like, not everything in Star Wars has to be for everyone, which I think has been something really helpful over the past few years. Like, you know, as there's been this backlash, it's like, okay, well, if you didn't like Last Jedi, there's another movie. And if you didn't like Mandalorian, there's another show. And that's what kind of kills me about the idea of the Acolyte being canceled, is that mentality only works if there is something different. And if you're saying there's no more Acolytes, it's just the Mandoverse.
Like, and that's boring. I'm bored of it.
Like, it's so boring. Like, I've written about this on my newsletter numerous times. Like, I appreciated that Jon Favreau loves Star Wars and that, you know, he brought the Mandalorian to life. And he's obviously done a lot of real, you know, major innovation for Disney, both with the Jungle Book. He, you know, launched the MCU with Iron Man. But to me, this has become, and I've used this term several times now, The Mandalorian is not a TV show. It's a checklist of cool Star Wars things. Here's R5-D4. Here's, you know, Cad Bane. You know, here's the Darksaber. It's just a checklist of things that fans have wanted to see again. And, you know, Filoni, you know, despite being the heir apparent to George Lucas in terms of understanding Star Wars lore and the mythology and, like, what the Force means, and I love the stuff he's done, but he's also fallen into that same idea of, like, he has his toys and he just wants to play with his toys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the last thing I want to see is a movie with deepfake Luke Skywalker, like, or, you know, the voice modulated late James Earl Jones doing Darth Vader for Infinity. Like, I don't want that. Like, either stop telling those stories or bring in new actors who can actually, you know, put some humanity in these roles. Like, it was so cool to see Luke Skywalker that one time. I think it was the end of season two of Mandalorian.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh my God, it's Luke Skywalker. Who's going to play him? Is it Sebastian Stan? And everyone's like, whoa, what just happened here? Who was that? And we found out it wasn't a deep fake. It was some, you know, pre-deep fake, you know, CGI magic. Obviously Mark Hamill stood in for him, did some voice work, but, you know, they did some, you know, CGI trickery with his voice. I don't want, it's a one-off trip. I don't want that to be the future of Star Wars. I'm so bored of it. And I was honestly so annoyed when they announced that that was going to be the first, you know, the return to the theaters for Star Wars post episode 9. I'm intrigued by what James Mangold wants to do at Dawn of Jedi. I want to see Daisy Ridley get a chance to actually, you know, do, you know, what to me is basically what should have been episode 9, you know, a new Jedi Order story. And I guess I'm on board for Filoni doing, you know, Heir to the Empire, like with Thrawn and everything. Like that's what they're obviously building toward. But to me, like the Mandoverse is so played out, and the idea of making this Mandalorian Grogu movie, it's, you know, it's an episode, it's a season of TV that accidentally became a movie. And we've heard, you know, like Temuera Morrison has said, like, well, he was originally in the plans, but now he's not because it's a movie. And like, it's, you know, it's just, at best, it's treading water, but more likely it's a few steps backwards for Star Wars.
And the cynical way to look at it too is that Mandalorian, the Mandoverse, has made a ton of money for Disney, so they'll keep reinvesting in what has made a ton of money. And at this point, I think the only reason that Andor wasn't canceled was because of all the critical acclaim it got, because that's not exactly a cash cow for Disney either. And I think that if it had had more of a mixed reception, that we probably wouldn't even be seeing a season two. And I think, and this is really hard for me as a longtime Star Wars fan, but I'm just not as interested in the new movies or shows anymore. And it, with the exception of Andor season two, like, I don't really care about the Mandoverse as a movie. I like James Mangold as well as a director. I have liked some of the stuff he's done. So I'd be most interested in seeing a Dawn of the Jedi movie. But what was so disappointing to me as someone who was mixed on The Acolyte, but really loved it, loved certain parts of it, is that certain parts of The Acolyte felt really new and fresh and different. And I feel like it's been a while since we saw something Star Wars on screen that feels different. And I think that, you know, the books are doing some really cool, interesting things, same with the comic books, but on screen, it's just becoming more and more rare to see a show that isn't just let's smoosh our favorite action figures together. And, you know, there was definitely some sop to that in The Acolyte with Darth Plagueis and Yoda showing up at the end. But there were parts of The Acolyte that I had never seen before on screen that I thought was really fun, like the bleeding of the Kyber crystal to make a red lightsaber. I really liked how, like, dark and violent it was at time, and that's a personal preference thing because I love dark, violent action movies. But it just felt new and different and exciting in certain moments, and then other moments it would drive me insane, and it made no sense. But the points that did do something different, I think, were really special. And that's ultimately the biggest bummer for me as a fan, is feeling like Star Wars, the powers that be in Star Wars, don't really care about going out on a limb. They care about making money. And I get it, you're a business, but also you're Disney. You're richer than God. You can do some creative things every once in a while.
Well, and I think it probably helps Andor's case that Tony Gilroy knew going in that he was telling a two-season story, and so there isn't a question of, are they going to get renewed for another season? They're telling a one-and-done story. I actually, like, this is one of those things that kind of bothers me about the Obi-Wan conversation, is, like, the show was what it was, and we've talked about that, but it was always pitched as Ewan McGregor is coming back for this limited series. I'm pretty sure they even called it a limited series in marketing materials. And now everybody loves Ewan McGregor so much that people want another season of the show, and they're talking about it. And you know, I'm not saying I don't want more Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan Kenobi, but like, that was conceived of as one concrete start to finish story. And when you go in with a plan to do it one way, and then afterwards you're like, oh, but maybe what if we came back to it and did something else? That is how bad stories get told. Because you go in, you make the season, and you know what you're doing. And then people love it, and you go, well, can we, you know, cynically you could say, can we milk this? And, you know, and charitably you could say, can we give the fans more of what they want? Either way, what you're really saying is, can we come up with an excuse to bring these people back together? And anytime that is the genesis for your storytelling, you're in a bad place, because that is not going to deliver a story that deserves to be told. It's going to deliver a story that can justify being told. And that is not how any Star Wars show or any TV show in general should be put together. In this case, I think this was, you know, this is an interesting example of perhaps the only show outside the Mandoverse that we've seen in Star Wars that didn't go in as a, you know, one and done or planned to be one more season project, right? I mean, Obi-Wan was limited. Andor was planned to be two seasons. Ahsoka, I guess, but that's Mandoverse, right? Am I forgetting anything? I guess the animation, but this was the only live action show, I think, where we didn't know or have a strong sense going in that it would probably be X number of seasons. And I think that probably played into it because they didn't know where this was going. And they're very gun shy about letting something go in an open-ended way when they can't say for sure where things are going to wrap up or how much it's going to cost to get there.
What kills me about that we're openly talking about the show being canceled is all those examples you mentioned. There was always, you know, are they going to bring Kenobi back more? You know, Ahsoka, you know, there was a bit of time there where we're like, oh, maybe it feels like this should keep going, but maybe they're going to wrap it up in Mando. Maybe they're going to wrap it up in, you know, Filoni's movie. This is the only case where obviously we haven't got an official announcement from Lucasfilm, but that a trade deadline, who was, you know, one of the three or four major trades, they don't get these things wrong. They reported this was canceled. And like you said earlier, Eric, there was no pushback from Lucasfilm. Someone put it out there that this show was done as close to official as it could be. And that almost feels to me like they're twisting the knife a little bit more. Obviously, you know, it's on purpose, but of all these shows that you've listed, this is the only one that we've got in a, hey, this is done as close to an official announcement from Disney as possible.
And I think, you know, part of that could just be, is the door open a crack for them to change their minds? I don't think the cast seems to think that that's in the cards. I don't know if Leslie Headland has addressed that directly since that report came out in Deadline, but you're right that this is the only time that we've gotten anything close to a definitive word about a show's future, and it wasn't even in an official source.
Yeah, like, why not just let people have, you know, I don't want people to have false hope, but why not just let it, you know, they haven't made an announcement for any of these things previously. Like, why not just say, why not just not say anything? Like, obviously, internally, they have to talk to the cast and crew. You don't want, you know, Leslie Headland thinking forever this is going to keep going. But to actually let it get out to a trade and let it, you know, cement itself meant this was done unlike any other show.
Yeah, it just seems kind of disrespectful to have it leaked in that way and then not dispelled. I guess it's not out of the realm of possibility that this was leaked without Disney's tacit acknowledgement, but it just really seems like they're too good at what they do to not know that this was going to be published in a trade publication and then to not know how it would seem that they just didn't have a reaction at all. I think they kind of have to know what they're doing here, and maybe it's just that they haven't figured out a good way to announce it, but it's just like it seems really sucky and disappointing to the people who did like it, to the creators and actors and all of that. And then again, the silence also enables those fans, or I say fans, those trolls who are able to run with the narrative. And of course, even if Disney put out a statement tomorrow saying explicitly, like, this is canceled because of money issues and not because we listened to, your racist trolling. I mean, that wouldn't convince the trolls otherwise. But the silence kind of allows for that narrative to take hold among the people who will see it that way. And I just... It just seems like a missed opportunity to me on pretty much every level.
I mean, I guess the charitable argument is they wanted to give people closure without putting it out under their name in a way that would give the ultimate vindication to the trolls. I mean, the trolls are going to get their vindication from a Deadline report, but probably not as strongly as from an actual Disney press release. That's the only thing I can think of.
Erica, I think, you know, at the beginning of the night, you mentioned kind of the idea of Lucasfilm, how they react to these previous, you know, movements, how they looked out for their actors. You know, we saw John Boyega and Kelly Marie Tran basically, you know, sidelined and abandoned by Lucasfilm when we made the shift from Last Jedi to The Rise of Skywalker. And it was weird. I feel like Lucasfilm, for a moment, realized that was a mistake and they want to try to fix it. You know, there was the racist backlash to Moses Ingram in Kenobi, and we saw Ewan McGregor, you know, release a video, you know, defending her, standing up for her, you know, saying she's part of the Star Wars family. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe finally Lucasfilm got this. Like, they understand that they can't drop this ball. And to me, you know, now we hit, you know, the Acolyte, and they obviously did, you know, the perception is they dropped the ball again, which is unfortunate because I really, really thought, and this was kind of one of the points I made in my original newsletters, like that this was, you know, to quote, you know, Boris Antaka, this is a moment to begin to make things right. They can't fix what they did on the transition from Last Jedi to Rise of Skywalker, but they could defend this show. And I never saw that. I saw every single Instagram post from Star Wars, you know, just inundated with racist, you know, homophobic commentary. But I never saw Lucasfilm, you know, actually forcefully step forward to say, hey, these are our people. We stand up for them. We stand up for these creators. They are part of the Star Wars family. And if you don't love them, maybe you don't love Star Wars.
I think that's totally correct. And I actually remember having that same thought with their defense of Moses Ingram in the Kenobi show, and that, okay, maybe they did learn a lesson from how absolutely poorly that Kelly Marie Tran and John Boyega in particular were treated. And it really seems that they did not learn that lesson, or the lesson that they learned was that they needed to maybe make a stop to it and then people would forget. And that was, I think, really disappointing. I'm sure it was disappointing for the actors to feel like that Lucasfilm, Disney didn't have their back, especially when you are just subject to such vitriol. And I think it would just be nice if there was more of a condemnation of the so-called fans who are just absolutely crazy and racist. And I just, in this current world that we are in, I don't see that happening.
And it does unfortunately connect to real world issues, which, you know, we stay away from on this show, but I think it's fair to say that there is a large overlap between elements of American politics and political actors in America and elements of Star Wars fandom and your position on the Acolyte. I mean, we have seen people who are, let's just say, in both worlds, making comments about the Acolyte, folks who are better known from the American politics side of things. So that like consideration is in there for Disney. If they speak up and they say, and they do a brushback and they say, you know, you are not fans, frankly, you are missing the point of Star Wars. That would, we would cheer that here on the Hoth Takes podcast, but that would probably not be the smartest decision for them from a business perspective. And this gets to, you know, their issues in Florida and, you know, the CEO's perspective on how much do we wade into political controversies. I think leadership over there seems to be getting a lot more cautious and a lot more circumspect about when they weigh in and how they do so. And I don't defend that or criticize it. I just say I think that's what's going on. And I think it's not surprising to see a corporation take that approach. I mean, if the cancellation is about being sort of cold-hearted in terms of profit, then I think the lack of defense of the show and the lack of defense of the cast members is sort of cold-hearted in terms of PR strategy. It's this idea that, like, we're not really going to win any new fans by standing up for these actors because the people who want that are probably going to keep watching anyway. And to be clear, I'm not saying I agree with that. That might not be true, but I think that's their belief, and I think there might be some reason to think that. I don't know how they model that, but it's hard to imagine somebody who really likes the content saying, I'm not going to watch anything anymore because Disney didn't put out a press release defending these actors. I'm not saying those folks aren't out there, and more power to them because they're standing on principle, but I think most people are not taking that approach. They're just watching fun TV shows that they like, and I think Disney realizes that they can get away with not standing up for their actors. Now, what might come back to bite them is if they ask Kelly Marie Tran to be in the new movie and she says, heck no, you can't treat me this way and then ask me to come back. Like, I don't know if she's coming back, and if she wants to come back and tell more stories, more power to her, but I would not blame her for saying no. And I think we might start to see that. We also might start to see, as I mentioned earlier, creators and performers not want to play in the Star Wars universe if they see that this is what is waiting for them when they are inevitably attacked by bigoted trolls.
This is one of the first times I've actually seen, maybe it's just where we are in social media and like where we are in terms of, you know, the Star Wars universe, but to actually have seen fans online heartbroken over this cancellation. Obviously, you know, The Last Jedi is probably the, you know, ground zero of what broke Star Wars fandom one direction or another, and kind of set the tone for the future. But I don't think people were conditioned yet to expect to be disappointed. I think once you built in, you know, the shift from Last Jedi to The Rise of Skywalker, and then this kind of said, oh, okay, you know, we're going to let you down. I think that's what really broke a lot of people's hearts over this, that it wasn't a one-off. It was personal.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a white guy. I have never not seen myself represented in Star Wars or pop culture in general. Everything is for me. You know, there's that SNL sketch, Wells for Boys with Emma Stone, where there's a little boy and he has a well that means something personal to him, and kids are making fun of him, and Emma Stone yells like, this isn't for you. Everything has been for me, and people who look and live like me. So the idea that there was this show filled with, you know, people of diversity, people of different sexual orientations, people of different gender identity, and that's what Disney said, we're gonna let it go. I think this is just, it's personal for a lot of people, and I don't know if this might be the final straw for some of these people. Like Eric, I know you said, like, you know, a lot of fans are gonna say, okay, well, there's another show, there's another movie. But like, this for a lot of Star Wars fans might have been the moment they fell in love with the franchise.
I think that's totally true. And the other thing is that when you make it clear to creators that this is not a safe space for them, when you are making it clear to queer creators, to Black and Asian and Latino actors and folks of pretty much any background except white guy, when you make it clear to them, we are not going to defend you, this is going to be a hellish experience, you're going to face a ton of vitriol, we're not going to back you up, and then we're going to cancel your show anyway. I think those actors and directors and writers and creators are going to look at everything that has happened and say, this isn't worth it to me. And then what we get is more stuff that's made by white guys. And you know, I have loved a lot of things made by white guys because I exist in the world. So,
and some of your best friends are white guys.
Some of my best friends are white guys, as Eric can attest to. But it's just, I think it's a loss. It's like, and I'm a journalist, so this is, of course, my bringing this back to journalism. But when you only have a certain kind of person in a newsroom, just think about all the stories you're missing just because you don't know what you're missing. And when you only have a certain kind of storyteller that's creating a movie or a TV show, you are missing a lot of opportunities and stories that could otherwise be told. And I think that's ultimately a failure for Disney. You know, it's not like they're going to suddenly stop making money if people stop watching their stuff because they feel betrayed by The Acolyte being canceled. That's not going to hurt them. They're fine. But it does hurt all of us in the long run. It hurts the creative process and it hurts just the audience in terms of what we're being exposed to. And I think that's just ultimately really disappointing. And you know, we'll if what we get is just The Mandalorian and Grogu for ever and ever and ever, like, it will be nobody's fault but Disney's, I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just agree with everything here. I know, I feel like we might be a little different of how we thought this show turned out. I really enjoyed most of it, but that might be because I just love the fact they were doing something new. I mean, I don't know if you could tell by my comparisons to Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker. I love Last Jedi.
I also love Last Jedi. I'm the Last Jedi stan of our trio.
When I first saw it opening night or opening Thursday, it wasn't what I was expected because I was fed, you know, making Star Wars and that whole universe of, you know, to expect, you know, Luke Skywalker at his height of power, floating rocks and everything, and that wasn't what we got. But once I realized, I was like, oh my god, this is so cool. I love Rian Johnson for the fact that he did something different. He questioned what Star Wars was and what it meant to people, and honestly has interpreted it better than almost anyone post George Lucas. The whole idea of, you know, a Jedi never uses the Force for attack, only for defense, and we saw Luke, you know, setting himself across the universe to, you know, fake fight Kylo Ren and defend his friends. So the idea that the Acolyte was actually doing something different. Yes, it, you know, it popped Yoda in the end. It put the Darth Plagueis cameo in. But it was really trying, even if it didn't stick the landing every time, it was trying to do something different. And I love Leslie Hendlin for that. And I wanted to see her have a chance to figure out where this could go in another season. And I know this will probably get picked up, you know, in the comics or the books, and that's where the High Republic began. But as someone who also really enjoyed Solo for just its entertainment value, I haven't read a single, whatever they call it, Crimson Empire or whatever it is, comic book that picked up that storyline. Like, I have read so many Star Wars books and comics, but eventually you can't read everything. And you can't buy everything. So to me, the idea of, like, that this isn't, I know we're not in the George Lucas era of, you know, G canon and C canon and everything anymore, but the idea that certain stories have the privilege of being told in live action, whether movies or TV, and everything else gets relegated to books and the comics, which also isn't fair because those people are creative geniuses. I know Lucasfilm, you know, they pulled an amazing team of people to develop and birth the High Republic. But the general perception is, you know, the movies and the TV shows, and everything else is something else. Like, you know, I have, you know, 40 Darth Vader, you know, trade paperbacks, but none of that holds the same canon as seeing Darth Vader walk down a hallway in Rogue One. The idea that the Acolyte doesn't get to finish its story the way it began its story, just to me is really sad. Both for the fans, for the people who got to see themselves in this show, for the creative people involved with it, and, you know, just for regular people who wanted to, you know, really see where this story could go, and, you know, if it could stick the landing. Obviously, you know, a lot of TV shows, we make a big deal about sticking the landing, but that's not the be all end all. But I really wanted to see what Leslie Headland could do with his story when given another, you know, 8 episodes to flesh it out.
Totally agree.
Yeah, and by all accounts, you know, Darth Plagueis was not in there as a, like, an Easter egg cameo. He was in there because the plan was very clearly to tell stories with him in season 2. So that's just another kind of indication of what we lost here. I would have loved to see Leslie Headland's take on, you know, connecting up the story of the Acolyte with the story of the Sith continuity from Plagueis to Palpatine moving into the Skywalker saga. And it seems like we're not going to get that now. So that's our loss as fans, and I think we should all, you know, sit for a moment and think about this community and what it means that we have people in the community who are pushing back on a story like this to the point where there's even a question of whether a cancellation decision was a response to that. The fact that that's even a possibility says a lot about this community, and we need to make some real changes and be really introspective in this community, because otherwise I think there's not a lot of hope for the future of this franchise if people don't want to come and work in it because of what the so-called fans do in response. All right, that does it for this episode of Hoth Takes. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much to Bill Cookman for joining us and being our guest on this episode. You can follow him on all the various social media platforms at Bill Cookman, B-I-L-L-K-U-C-H-M-A-N, and his newsletter is popcultureology.news. If you want to share your thoughts about this episode or suggest topics for future shows, you can email us at hothtakes@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter/X. We are at hothtakes. I'm Eric Geller on Twitter. Grace is Grace_Seegers, and Haley is Burdenator. Haley made our wonderful logo and banner art, and I edited the show and put together our music. And as always, we want to point out, for legal purposes, all Star Wars music and sound effects, all that stuff, it's the intellectual property of Lucasfilm. If you want to listen to previous Hoth Takes episodes, you can do that on our website, where we have a complete archive. That's hothtakes.wordpress.com. And if you like the show, you can please share it with a friend or family member. We are available on all the major podcasting platforms, and that includes Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We will see you next time. May the Force be with you.